We made our way to 1 Kings chapter 18. And chapter 18 tells the story of the great showdown between the Lord and this pagan god Baal that's introduced and championed by Ahab and his wife Jezebel. Now, this morning, we're going to get right up to the edge of the actual showdown, and we'll look at the showdown tonight. All right. Yeah, that's what it is. Bummers, huh? But there's some good stuff getting up to the edge of it. And then I want that to be kind of hanging in the air the rest of the day for you guys so that, you know, hopefully you're kind of choosing your own sides even today as, you know, you're out playing and just, you know, listening to the Lord speak to your heart about, you know, whatever kind of showdown maybe he's wanting to have in your heart too. And then we'll do that this evening. But it begins here in verse 1 of 18. It says, after a long time, in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land. So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab. So after some 3 years living with this poor widow woman and her son, the Lord speaks to Elijah and tells him that the time has finally come for the drought to end. The Lord had sent Elijah to King Ahab originally to tell him that the drought was in effect until the Lord said it was over. And now the Lord's sending him back to Ahab to tell him, okay, the drought is going to be ending soon. So it says, now the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab had summoned Obadiah, who was in charge of his palace. Obadiah was a devout believer in the Lord. While Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets, Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them in 2 caves, 50 in each, and had supplied them with food and water. Ahab had said to Obadiah, go through the land to all the springs and valleys. Maybe we can find some grass to keep the horses and mules alive so we will not have to kill any of our animals. So they divided the land they were to cover, Ahab going in one direction and Obadiah in the other. So we're given a little background information now about what's been happening in this northern kingdom of Israel during the drought. First it says, now the famine was severe. A famine almost always accompanied a severe drought. The bulk of their food supply comes from crops in one way or another. So when there's no water for growing the crops or keeping the animals watered, there is no food produced. Starvation, famine. And in an age when irrigation and water and food storage methods were primitive, you can imagine how fast a drought could ravage a land and just destroy people. In our own day, we have ways of preserving water, in massive reservoirs, holding it back for years, canning food so that it's on the shelf for years. So the effect of a drought in our day is not nearly as severe as it was in their day. In their day, there was not a whole lot of, you know, bump time before you experienced what was happening. Where here, we can get over it for a few years before it really starts hitting us. But these guys, they felt the effects of it almost immediately. It says, in Samaria, that was King Omri, Ahab's father, had built the city of Samaria and established it as the capital city of this northern kingdom, as opposed to Jerusalem, that was the capital city of the southern kingdom of Judah. And I'm just kind of giving this so that you guys have something to orient yourselves to how all this country is playing out at this point. But in verse 3, we're introduced to a man named Obadiah. And we want to pay a little bit of attention to Obadiah. He's a good guy. His name means servant or worshiper of Yahweh, and this again is a good description of this man, much like Elijah's name, my God is Yahweh. He's the man in charge of King Ahab's palace. He might be considered the chief of staff for him, or the minister of domestic affairs, and he is really one of the most important and powerful men in Ahab's court. And he turns out to be faithful to the Lord. He's a devout believer in the Lord. And it says that in the middle of this dark period, the Lord has placed this man in the middle of it, and he preserves some of his most faithful people with him. Because right in the middle of all of Ahab's wickedness, Jezebel trying to chase down God's prophets and priests and kill him, this man is actually preserving some of them. I can't imagine the intense pressure that he must have been under every day in the court as he is serving the king and his crazy wife. But a great example, I think, for us, as he maintains his devotion to the Lord, even when everyone around him is turning away from God. It's easy to be a follower of Jesus Christ when it's popular, when you're in a group of people like this. Oh, yeah, man, I'm crazy for Jesus. No one's going to dispute it. Yeah, dude, me too. But it's another thing entirely when you are standing alone, when you're in an environment where you're the one guy. We're given a glimpse into some of what he had to face here while serving in the palace of Ahab. Jezebel was systematically killing these prophets. He takes 100 of them and he hides them in caves, supplying them with food and water. Can you imagine the risk he's putting himself under here? I mean, if he gets caught, he's a dead man for what he's done here. And it makes me think of the quiet resistance that many carried out during World War II. People who were hiding the Jewish people under the Nazi regime. Have you considered that the place where you are at in life right now is exactly where the Lord wants you to be? I think a lot of times we struggle with, oh, you know, gosh, I'm not where I think I should be. I want to be somewhere else. I'm not doing enough. I need to be put in a better place to do something of importance. Sometimes we mistakenly assume that if the place where we are is not God-honoring in a most direct and obvious way, that, you know, where we must be where we shouldn't be. Was there anything God-honoring about the place where Obadiah is working? No, it was horrible. It was as anti-God as you can imagine. But he was serving the Lord there, and he was exactly where God wanted him to be. The neighborhood you live in, the job you have, the place where you go to school, the place where you conduct business, the park where you take your kids, wherever it is that you're at, is exactly where the Lord wants you to be in that moment. You're the shining light in that dark place. You're the salt, bringing flavor and preservation to what would otherwise be completely dead, no matter where it is that you're at. Jesus said in Matthew 5, 13 through 16. You're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. I think Obadiah is just a fantastic example of someone who's being salt and light in the place where God has put him. Great example for us to follow in that way. Ahab gives Obadiah orders to go in one direction. He's going to go in the other direction and search for some grass to feed their livestock. Ahab has hoped that they might be able to find some areas further away from the capital city where they can somehow find some grazing land for their animals so they don't have to kill them off. They don't have to let them starve to death and eat them, whatever it is they're going to do. Now, I want to talk for a moment about how Ahab is dealing with his problem. The drought was brought on because he had forsaken the Lord. It's a consequence of his sin. He's supposed to be leading the people of Israel in their relationship with the Lord. Instead, he's married this pagan witch from sight and brought her in, let her start running everything, introduces her pagan gods and goddess, brings in her prophets, her priests, her holy men, and she's trying to systematically just destroy the entire faith and culture of the Israelite people. And Ahab does nothing about it. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. On the surface, it seems like a responsible thing for him to do here, searching for grazing land for his livestock. But underneath it reveals a man who remains hard-hearted toward the Lord. He's continuing to live his life by his own rules and effort rather than humbly submitting himself to the Lord and repenting of his sin. That's what's really going on here, see? Instead of repenting of his sin, turning from his course that he's been following in life, falling on his face before the Lord, asking the Lord to forgive him and restore him, Ahab, he goes out and he tries to find a workable solution to live under the judging hand of God. Let me say that one more time, because we do the same thing, don't we? He goes out and he tries to find a workable solution to live under the judging hand of God in his life, rather than repenting of his sin and doing the right thing. When the Lord begins to press in on us because of our sin, we need to repent. Be brokenhearted. Come before him. Seek his forgiveness, his restoration. Obviously, we have to live with the messes that we make. But to do only that is a very foolish way to live, and we are not really making any progress in getting better, having our life put back together and having our relationship with the Lord restored. And that's the most important thing, is to have our relationship with him restored. He'll help us deal with the mess that we've created. And sometimes we're going to have to take some lumps. There's just no way of getting around it. We made the mess, and we get to live with it. But to only live with the mess has failed to get the point entirely in a relationship with the Lord, huh? We're not allowing the Lord to accomplish his good work in our life through the trials and difficulties then. Trials, difficulties, they come. But to only just try to live through the trial and difficulty without having a soft heart toward the Lord and listening to him and letting him bring us back, begin to walk with him again, we're missing it all the way. And Ahab, he's missing it all the way. He's not making 1 ounce of progress in his life because of the way he's dealing with God's judgment in his life. Hebrews 12:7 says, endure hardship as discipline. God's treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you're illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respect them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Verse 7 says, as Obadiah was walking along, Elijah met him. Obadiah recognized him, bowed down to the ground and said, is it really you, my Lord Elijah? Yes, go tell your master Elijah is here. What have I done wrong, asked Obadiah, that you are handing your servant over to Ahab to be put to death? As surely as the Lord your God lives, there's not a nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to look for you. And whenever a nation or kingdom claimed you were not there, he made them swear they could not find you. But now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here. I don't know where the Spirit of the Lord may carry you when I leave you. If I go and tell Ahab and he doesn't find you, he will kill me. Yet I, your servant, have worshipped the Lord since my youth. Haven't you heard, my lord, what I did while Jezebel was killing the prophets of the Lord? I hid 100 of the Lord's prophets in 2 caves, 50 in each, and supplied them with food and water. And now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here. He'll kill me. Elijah said, as the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will surely present myself to Ahab today. So it's on his way, carrying out the instructions of King Ahab, searching for food for the livestock in the midst of this terrible drought, when Obadiah runs into Elijah, and this is the first time Elijah's been seen in over 3 years. And Elijah tells Obadiah to go to Ahab and tell him that Elijah wants to meet with him today. And Obadiah, he's very fearful about going and doing this because he's afraid that if he tells Ahab to meet Elijah at some certain place and Elijah isn't there, then Ahab is going to kill him. He's been trying to find this guy all this time. And now Obadiah says, oh, he's over here. He goes over there and goes, he's not here. You're dead. You're messing around with me. You know how badly I want to kill this guy. He's made these surrounding nations swear to him that they have not seen Elijah. And it's ironic to remember that during this time, while Ahab has been searching for Elijah, Elijah has been living in the homeland of Ahab's wife, Jezebel, this whole time. He's been living right under their nose this whole time for 3 years. Obadiah wants to know what bad thing he's done to deserve to have Elijah send him to the king like this to be surely killed. He recounts the good things he's done. I've hidden these 100 prophets, been feeding them. I'm a good guy. Why are you trying to get me killed? I'm on your side, Elijah. You're treating me like I'm an enemy or something now. Elijah promises Obadiah that he'll not run off. I promise I'll be here when Ahab shows up. You have nothing to be afraid of. I'm not jerking you around. This is a real thing. I'm here for good. Are you ever afraid to obey the Lord in something because you're concerned it's a setup? And you're going to get wiped out as a result of it? What if I do this thing and the Lord doesn't come through? What if I step out and do this thing and he leaves me twisting in the wind? What if I take action on this thing that God has placed in my heart and he's not there for me? What if? I just want to say the Lord never stabs his children in the back. He never stabs his children in the back. If the Lord's telling you to do something, step out in some way, to make a stand in some way, then do it. He can be trusted. He's not setting you up. He's not jerking you around. He's not getting you ready to be sucker punched. He doesn't operate that way. And this is the message that Elijah gives to Obadiah here. As the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will surely present myself to Ahab today. I'll be here, dude. So verse 16. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, is that you, you troubler of Israel? I've not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You've abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Elijah and Ahab, they finally meet again now after 3 years. And the first words out of Ahab's mouth to Elijah reflect the anger and the bitterness that he feels towards him. Is that you, you troubler of Israel? You troubler, you trouble bringer, you troublemaker? You one who has brought all the misery and suffering on my people? I hate your guts, Elijah. I want to kill you. You deserve to die, Elijah, for what you've done. All this terrible stuff, it's your fault, Elijah. Is it? Elijah replies, It's not my fault. If blame's to be placed on anyone, it's to be you, Ahab. He's the one, see, who's led his people away from the Lord. He's the one who's allowed this evil pagan influence of his wife to run the country. He's the one who's forsaken the Lord. He's the one who has failed to do what he knows is right. He's the one who's responsible for the suffering and death in his kingdom. It's all Ahab's. All his. But Ahab's blaming of Elijah for the misery that his own sin has brought upon his life and the lives of the people of Israel is a classic example, isn't it, of how people deal with their sin. Proverbs 19:3 says, a man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. A man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. James 1:13 says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he's dragged away and enticed. Then after desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. See, when it all starts coming apart, it has to be someone else's fault. It can't possibly be my fault. And the one that's ultimately blamed is God. Why have you let this happen, Lord, in my life? The heart rages against the Lord for all that's going wrong in our life. But he's not the one who's brought the trouble. We brought the trouble ourselves. Elijah tells Ahab to assemble the people of Israel and the 950 prophets of Baal and Asherah and to meet him on Mount Carmel. It's going to be decided who's the real God of Israel. And that's what we're going to look at this evening. But four things that we see in this story that I want to remind us of in closing. First is the example of Obadiah, remaining devoted to the Lord in the face of intense opposition. And it's a great example for all of us, the places that we work, that we live, that we serve our communities. We're the minority. You know, you might be the only guy in your office, the only guy on the construction crew, the only guy wherever it is that you work that honors the Lord. But you're not the only guy who lives like that. Obadiah lived the same way. And he lived in just severe hostility toward the Lord. He remained faithful. He did the right thing. He was a man of the Lord through all of that. He wasn't stupid about it. You know, just saying stupid stuff to create problems. He was wise about how he did it, wasn't he? He looked for those opportunities that the Lord made available for him, and he took advantage of those opportunities, you know? He had those 100 prophets, fed them in those caves, and it was against the law of the day, but it was the right thing to do. And in your life, in my life, there are situations all around us where we can do the right thing. We can, you know, honor the Lord. We can glorify Christ in wise ways rather than stupid ways and really bring honor to him and really be promoting his kingdom. The example of Obadiah being salt and light in this very dark place is a good one for us to keep in mind and take to heart. Also, the example of Ahab here and how he's dealing with his problems. He tries to find a workable solution to live under the judging hand of God rather than repenting of his sin and returning to the Lord himself. He's just trying to find some way to, you know, survive underneath all of that. And lastly, the example of Ahab blaming Elijah and ultimately God for his troubles. And he's the one who brought all the trouble. It's his fault. It's not Elijah's fault. His own folly has ruined his life. Yet his heart rages against the Lord. Well, next time we get to read about this big showdown between the Lord and this pagan god of Baal on Mount Carmel. So let's bow our heads in prayer, and the guys will close in us with a couple songs of worship. Father, we thank you for this story about Elijah, and we thank you for men like Obadiah, who in one sense it looks like they have very little control, very little power, very little ability to do much of anything in the situation they're in, but in reality you used him in a really profound and powerful way. And he served you, Lord, in the midst of a hostile environment. He brought glory and honor to you. God, I pray for every single man in this room that you'll fill each one with your courage and your creativity, Lord, about how to do that in their life, to honor you, Lord. And in the midst of what is, for most of these guys, for all of us in one way or another, a hostile situation, Lord, hostile toward our faith, hostile toward Christ. God, that we would be men of grace and wisdom. Ask you to make that so in us. In Jesus' name.